Okay, tonight is Sunday, the 20th of June, 2004. The Sunday night speakers meeting of Narcotics Anonymous welcomes our first speaker, Ushi.
Hi, my name is Ushi. I'm an addict.
Hi, Ushi.
You know, I was just sitting here and I was having this complete blank experience, you know, that a lot of us know so well. You know, and what came to my mind was just out of the clear blue, this part from Just for Today that says, "Just for today, I will be unafraid." And then, you know, I mean, not that I know this by heart now after a few years I've been around, but somewhere in there it also says, you know, my thoughts will be on my new associations. And then something like, you know, people who are not using drugs and have found a new way of life. And then, you know, I was just thinking about that. You know, it's just for today I will be unafraid. And and my thoughts, my focus will be on the things that matter to me today, you know, and that's my new associations, which is, you know, to think about what is sustaining me these days, you know, that I'm not using anymore. And you know, and over time it has all come down to my relationships with people, and especially my relationships with people like you. And over the years, and I've been around for some years, actually I'm going to be celebrating 19 years this year, and I have to tell you that one of the pieces of our literature that has really sustained me through a lot of things over the years was the Just for Today. And just for me, you know, this is one of the most beautiful pieces of literature that we have, because I drew so much strength from just saying that Just for Today piece out to myself, you know, opening it up in the, you know, in the meditation book or wherever else we have it, and even in the meeting, sometimes I'm just waiting for that to come up at the end, you know, because it sums it up so well. And what it sums up for me too is that I'm sitting here and I'm one of you. I am the same as you. You know, there's no difference. If I think there are differences, well, there really aren't, because I ended up at that point of complete hopelessness and desperation the same way you have. And even though I didn't spend any time in jails and I've never been arrested, I still know how it is to be in a prison, you know, in a prison, being completely owned by probably the biggest slave master that there is, which is our addiction. It's my addiction, and it's the drugs that I use. And whenever I start talking about my feelings, I know that you, the people in these rooms, will know what kinds of feelings I talk about, because you know most of them. I did most of my using over in Europe, it started innocently enough. I was trying to escape, I was trying to forget, and I found something that helped me forget and escape for a moment who I was and what I thought of myself and how I perceived the world. And at least initially, using created a world for me that felt good and comfortable and positive and hopeful. And you know, once I realized that, you know, I wanted to have it more and more and more, until eventually I was hooked like everybody else in these rooms. And, you know, I went the whole career that all of us have gone, which is eventually live to use and use to live. You know, and I can't really say that I had this horrific, traumatic, horrible childhood. I really didn't. You know, my parents did the best they could. Raised me in a post-war Europe where, you know, you didn't have a lot of toys, and the parents are all into building things back up, and everybody was into materialistic things, and yeah, I mean, parents didn't spend a lot of time with their kids, so what, right? I mean, that wasn't it, you know, but for some reason, you know, I was always a pretty sensitive kind of insecure girl. I had, you know, some little physical things that weren't really a big deal, but for a kid, they're a big deal. I took a bad fall when I was like a small kid and I had all my teeth knocked out. You know, of course, you know, that does something to your self-worth. You know, when everybody looks at you and tells you, oh, you shouldn't be eating so much chocolate. You know, so anyway, you know, so you have a bunch of little things come up that are really not meaning that much, but when you have these little self-worth issues, you are very susceptible to whatever it is that promises you something better, something, you know, wonderful, something exciting. And then in some way too, I was a rebel, you know, doing drugs was just a really exciting, adventurous thing. So whatever, you know, I mean, it doesn't even matter the reason so much why we got into using and why we ended up the hope to die dope fiends that we ended up as. And you know, it eventually brought me to this room, this sense of that I had no other place to turn to, that I was just utterly hopeless. I had tried 3 methadone detoxes and used all along while that was going on. And did a geographic, left Europe, came to America, lost everything because I didn't have the resources anymore to get my drugs. Got married to my connection, what else is new? Ultimately, when my connection husband got busted and I was on my own and had reached that point of desperation, I realized that I just did not have it in me to go out there into the streets of Los Angeles and stand on the street corner or do whatever it takes to get drugs. And I knew deep in my heart that I wouldn't last out there for more than 5 minutes and be either dead, taken away in somebody's car someplace to never return, or end up in jail and being dead pretty soon. And knowing that, I guess that was what most of us at some point experienced, that moment of clarity that either I'm going to be dying or something is going to intervene, something is going to happen, and I'm going to live. Well, what happened was I, you know, ended up calling the Narcotics Anonymous hotline in the San Gabriel Valley of Los Angeles. And how did I get the phone number? And that story some people have heard before, because there's something that I find really highly amusing about it, because it tells you exactly an addict's kind of thinking. I found the phone number in a methadone clinic, Glendale, San Fernando Road. You know, trades there every morning at 6 o'clock, you know, $10 in hand. And there was a phone number, Narcotics Anonymous. Have a drug problem? We can help. I called the number, and actually a live person answered, which is something to be very grateful for these days here in Los Angeles, that when you get a live person to answer the hotline. Now, I asked this guy where I should be going to get directions. And he says, well, you know, we have meetings and, you know, and you could come to meetings and, you know, if you want to come tonight. I said, well, let's just cut through the chase. So what do I got to do? You know, you're going to give me a number? Do I make up a number to get well? Or, you know, how do you do it? I'm assuming it's anonymous because you say Narcotics Anonymous. So you know, you're going to do something for me, right? And he says, well, yeah, we're doing something for you. However, you know, we're not, you know, it's going to be without the use of drugs. We are about not using drugs anymore. And I told him, you know, you're full of it. You know, I don't believe that. How could you? I can't believe that. He says, well, you know, you just come and check it out. You know, I said, well, are you using drugs? He says, no, I'm not. I said, well, you know, like how long? He says, 5 years. And I said, oh, no. And so anyway, he talked me into checking out this meeting, and it was out in Rosemead. And it was one of those poolside meetings in a huge apartment complex. And now, I have to tell you that in those last couple of days, I was fluctuating between this total desperation and all of a sudden having these grandiose ideas, right? So I was all of a sudden convinced that behind the door frame, I had stashed some dope. Because, you know, sometimes, you know, you reach up and you put it up on the ledge. And I was convinced it had fallen behind. And I took this Phillips screwdriver and ripped off the door frame, the whole door frame, to find the dope. And, you know, I had a couple of other little masterpieces like that going on. So anyway, somehow I scraped up enough or smoked enough cardboard or whatever I did to be halfway okay to make it to that meeting that night. And anyway, that was, you know, throwing the, well, throwing the oath is an odd word because I know in a different, throwing the seeds for my way into recovery. And my first meeting clean was actually a women's meeting. And I went to this meeting with just slightly over a day clean, like 27, 28 hours clean. And they asked, you know, are there any newcomers in this room? I raised my hand, you know, my name is Oshia, I'm an addict. They said, keep coming back, welcome. And, you know, that was my first experience. And I was like kind of sitting there in the room and just checking things out. At the same time, I was feeling so miserable and kicking and sweating and gagging and my eyes were running, nose and sick in my stomach and all that stuff, and I'm sitting there. And eventually, oh, you know, the other thing was they said, any newcomers here? And I said, yes, my name is Ochi, I'm an addict, and I also said, I need help. And, you know, I'm saying that now because this was a very important thing for me to say, you know, I need help. And then after the meeting, they hugged me, and that was another mind-blowing thing. And that was actually the first hint that this might be a place where I'd be coming back to. These people looked like they really wanted me there. And, you know, and I was really listening and thinking about, okay, you know, there's this, she said this and she said that and she said that. I can relate to that. That means something to me. I know that feeling. I did that, what this person did. And those were the things that led me to thinking, I came home, you know, this is where I need to be. And you know what? I think there's hope. And these women who hugged me, it was six women altogether, they started to pick me up every day at home and took me to meetings. And that's what I did the first year. I went to a meeting every night, every single night. And, you know, I have to tell you, it wasn't easy putting together these years. You know, like I said, a lot of times, the just for today is something that I need to say. And then the other thing, you know, I think sometimes we have this thing about that good things come in threes and in eights. And, you know, we have the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, the 12 concepts, and then we also have this honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, another set of three important threes. And then another one, the serenity prayer, even though it's not an NA thing, but when you think about it, it has what we're striving to accept, to change, and to know, to learn. You know, to accept, to change, and to know. And I mean, that's what it's been about for me in NA. And I've struggled with all three of them because I had a hard time with accepting a lot of things and with changing. Accepting because I was a know-it-all. Sometimes I still am. You know, sometimes I still think, you know, especially having a few years clean, it's very tempting to think I know it all. However, it's also easier after some years to realize that I don't know anything in a way. That, you know, sometimes I have to start way back from scratch and get real powerless again and do a real surrender again and become willing to change. And then the third thing that has been really important for me to understand is that this program is about relationship, and that it's about developing a relationship with my higher power or God of my understanding. Then to develop, based on that, develop a relationship with myself, and then develop a relationship with other people in my life. And the steps are set up that way. It's really quite beautiful. And since it says in the basic text too that there's always opportunity for us to grow, you know, it doesn't matter how much clean time you have. It doesn't matter. You know, like I sometimes, just like the newcomer, sit in a meeting waiting to hear that one thing that's going to make that shift for me, just like a newcomer. You know, sometimes I can be just that skeptical, just that doubtful, wondering if I'm ever going to make it, that sometimes I'm so overwhelmed, you know, and sometimes decisions are so hard to make and so painful, and then, you know, running into a meeting hoping that somebody is going to say something in that meeting that's just going to give me a ray of hope. And I firmly believe, really, that my higher power speaks through other people. And we could probably talk for hours about the different ideas of higher power, and it's all fine. I mean, that's just the beautiful thing about this program, that we can all have our different higher powers. For me, it's a lot about two things. One, for me, is meditation. And the other thing is to reach out to other people and let them know what is going on. And as I'm reaching out to people, some more specific, some more general, in meetings a lot of times pretty general, some of them just love me through it without saying much, and then their love and care and hugs are a perfect part that will help me along the way. And then some other people actually tell me what the truth is and what I need to hear. And then that, to me, is my higher power speaking, you know, what the real truth is in a matter. And just like in meditation, when I hear that voice or that idea coming out of nowhere all of a sudden, that is the ultimate truth of the matter. That leads me then to making a choice and a decision, and sometimes I know it's the right decision because it feels right, but it still hurts at the same time. You know, because I find in NA a lot of times, you know, we have to make decisions and choices that in the moment don't feel good. We know they're the right thing to go do, but our heart isn't there yet. Our understanding isn't there yet. And sometimes it takes a longer time and with hindsight to see that, yes, that was the thing that needed to be done. That was the right thing. And so I've become more willing to follow direction when I get into trouble or when I get to a crossroads. But also, I have to tell you that I still do a lot of self-will things a lot of times. You know, you know, when it comes to the sixth and seventh steps, I believe it's a lifelong process. And somebody in some literature could be ours or somebody else's. And sometimes, you know, I care a lot, sometimes I don't care, as long as it's something good. And this is about this image about this onion where you keep peeling away the layers. You know, and that's how I see myself. You know, over time, I have an opportunity to go deeper and deeper and deeper and make the change more profound and you know, chip away or let go of this last resistance about something. Or, you know, find myself doing something one more time that causes me ultimately a lot of pain. And what happens is that I'm a master in justification. You know, like, you know, the know-it-all, you know. I'm a master in justification. I read a few weeks ago about justification. There's a really cool thing that fits me perfectly. You know, where there was in the newspaper this determination that starch-coated frozen french fries are a fresh vegetable. Now, I can do that. I can really do that. I can take something, you know, and make it look good, you know, and make it look like it's something, you know, that it really isn't. And then, of course, you know, I end up hurting. And come at this end of the road, and I wonder, how did this happen? You know, how did this happen? This was different. This was not what I did before. This is different. You know, and then the people who love me, when I moan and groan in front of them, they say, well, this is different, you know, and this was this, and this, and this, and this, that was that. And then they love me and they say, you know, it wasn't different. You know, it wasn't different. You know, if you want to use, I love metaphors, right? If you want to use a metaphor, this is like variations on a theme by Uchi. You know, so one time you play da-da-da-da, and the other time you play da-da-da-da, you know, but it's still the same theme, you know. You just think it sounds different, when it really doesn't sound that different. You can tell what the theme is. And the thing is, I just need to play that until that horse is beaten to death, you know, until that theme is totally explored. You know, all 32 variations are done, there's nothing more coming. You know, you don't want to start over from the beginning because you're really sick and tired of it and you can't hear it anymore. So, anyway, so for the musicians among us, that might have been an interesting example. So, I've really come to a point of gratitude, I have to tell you. I've been going through a really difficult phase lately that involved a decision that's really painful. I had to let go of something that involved a big dream. It involved a complete change of my life. It involved possibly moving to Asia. It was like this big, big deal. And when I ended up at this point to make this decision that I was not going to do that, it was like my whole dream crumbled. And even though I know in my heart it was the right decision, it hurts like hell. It really, I'm having a hard time with it. And so as I'm going through it and having some bad days, some good days, some odd days, you know, I'm trying to show up. Showing up for work, I'm getting up in the morning, I'm telling myself I can do this. And I'm not only doing that, I'm you know, I'm taking a shower, I'm picking some nice clothes, I'm making sure the colors match in my clothes, and, you know, and just make sure I put on some little earrings, you know, and just actually just show up, you know, and because I know, you know, this works when they say fake it till you make it. It really, that's how it is. And, you know, and like as you think, so shall it be. And so, you know, if I make these little exercises towards the solution, towards the brighter day, to do everything that's right, to do the footwork, call my sponsor, reach out to friends, you know, go to a barbecue, go to a meeting, not say no to an NA request, and work with my sponsees, then things are going to be okay. You know, that's how life goes. You know, I mean, we have these up times and these you know, down cycles and up cycles, and it seems to me that, you know, we need these so-called down cycles, these times when all of a sudden everything seems to rush in on us and drown us and overwhelm us. It's like one more thing, God, I can't handle this, I'm going to make it through it. Those are the times to get to the basic tools, get to our conscious contact with our higher power, for me to do the meditation and realize that these are actually the times when I do most of my growing. I don't do that much growing when things go well. I do a lot of my growing when I'm in pain or when I'm struggling with something. And you know, when I was still drawing, that was the time when I did my greatest drawings. You know, out of that creative, you know, there's just everything is just stirred up so much. Everything is so in flux that a lot of things can come out because things aren't set and packed down. They're stirred up. And, you know, and of course, I mean, we need the up times too, because at some point we need to take a break and get a rest and, you know, and enjoy the fruits of our labor, like it says in our basic text. You know, because we need to, since we are conditioned to seek the fun and the enjoyment and the good feelings, you know, we need to have that too, to stick around, to not get loaded. You know, if everything was just struggle for the rest of our life, forever, hell, you know, why, you know, who wants that, right? To be a great person, but like suffering 24 hours a day, I mean, what kind of growth is that good, and what's that good for? So, yeah, you know, I don't want to die as a, what a great person, just miserable all her life, you know, I mean, really, you know? So, anyway, through this hard time that I'm going through now, I'm finding that I can count on friends. I never thought I could count on them that much. Some friends, I really find out they are not showing up. And that's life too. That's the reality too. You know, some people you think are your close friends, and then when things get hard, all of a sudden they're just way busy because they want you with the sunshine face all the time. They don't want you struggling. But then other people, you're just amazed that they show up. You know, and again, that's higher power to me. And, you know, other things is like, you know, sponsees who were struggling for a long time with self-centeredness and it's just me. All of a sudden, you know, something broke through and they felt that I was having a hard time, you know, and they started sending me a little card by email or sending me a little card by postmail or calling me up and actually asking me how I am. Which is a very good thing to do in sponsorship, that we ask our sponsor on occasion how he or she is doing, instead of just using them as a trash can. So that is happening, and it makes me feel so good. It makes me feel how worthwhile this is,